Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 69 of Season 7 of the Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 visualist action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is DJ Valentine of Simplistic Review. Welcome back to the show, DJ.
In the immortal words of Trey Parker and Matt Stone, Minute 69, nice.
Okay. So, Minute 69 begins with John quipping and ends with John looking up while, being in the elevator.
Right.
So, we ended things yesterday with John showing up in the Fed, and we're pretty much going to be staying in the Fed the rest of this. We're going to be staying in parts of the Fed for the rest of this week. let's leave it at that. And, right. He introduces himself or identifies himself to Carl, pulls out his badge, shows him, and Carl just looks him up and down and just doesn't know what he's seeing there. And he asked him yesterday, he says, "Are you all right?" And then John responded and said, "Yeah." And he goes, "It's laundry day."
A line I've said many times in real life. I remember from this movie, so. Like caught out and somebody's like, "Hey, your shirt's inside out," or something like it's any kind of thing that's on me. I was like, "It's laundry day." I say it from, and I got it from this freaking movie.
did you know that Weird Al has a song called Laundry Day?
Oh God, what is it spoofing? What song is he originally?
I think it spoofs Bad Hair Day.
Oh shit! Now I gotta check that out. Weird Al Yankovic, one of America's greatest geniuses of all time.
I love Weird Al. I didn't like the Weird Al movie, but I love Weird Al.
I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to watch it because I was like, I love Weird Al, so I don't want to tainting what I how I feel about the guy who is again a genius. So yeah, I'm not gonna mess with him.
The one of the amazing things that he did, and he's done a lot of amazing things, was I think it was probably about 5 or maybe even 7 years ago. They had him on the Emmys where he had to make up words to theme songs from movies from TV shows. And so he made up words for
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, right? So he had to make up words for Game of Thrones, which was just hilarious.
Kids, Weird Al Yankovic is probably top. I mean, just a lot of not saying a lot of influence. We do sketches and stuff like that where we make fun of stuff on our show, but not saying that we take a lot of influence from Weird Al. But it's like. Just UHF is a whole just by itself in a bubble. Holy crap. That is like pure unadulterated good stuff comedy right there.
Right. Okay, so it was actually 10 years ago. It was August 2014 and he created lyrics for the theme songs to Mad Men, Scandal, Homeland, Modern Family and Game of Thrones.
Mad Men. I can only imagine. But it has something to do with cigarettes or something.
Yeah, it's just the Game of Thrones one was amazing. I wish I could find the lyrics to it. That would be great. I when I do a search, all I get is the clip from the Emmys. So yeah, doesn't give me the lyrics though. But he's amazing. The fact that he's able to do these type of things. Obviously, he doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think he still
do it.
That's true. No, I mean, it. I doubt he does them on the spot. But still, No.
In terms of writing, that guy is top notch. They sleep on his because of it's Weird Al, but you got to understand what he's actually doing. Ain't easy, man. That is hard stuff right there.
Right, and he has to pay a lot of royalties.
It's funny because I bet you nowadays people like if I had a show like I did a show and they said Weird Al Yankovic wants to spoof you, I'm like, yeah, let him. I would love for him to spoof me.
That's
fantastic.
True.
I would love for that to happen.
It's a good point.
What does he need? Does he need any sets? Can I be in it? I'd be so happy if that were to happen.
Yeah. So anyone who's interested, just do a do a search for Weird Al Yankovic Emmys Game of Thrones lyrics, so you can actually see what those lyrics are. Again, I keep finding the videos. I can't find the lyrics themselves to just talk about them. So, which is very unfortunate because I would love to read those lyrics right now. So John basically says laundry day, which I think is pretty funny because the clothes that he's wearing, is something would be probably the first things you put in the laundry, with the.
I don't think he would put that in a laundry. His clothes, again, we want to underline the fact that his clothes are destroyed. You're throwing those clothes away. His pants has holes in it. His shirt has holes in it. Those clothes are gone.
It's true. It's true. But whatever. It's a nice Bruce Willis quip for being able to add things here. So why not?
Right.
It's one of the endearing things of Bruce Willis in the 80s and 90s, that his quips were very different than the type of quips that you would get from Schwarzenegger or Stallone and stuff like that. For them,
Right.
it was like
They weren't
a one
cliche.
line
They
thing.
weren't cliche ones.
That's right.
Yeah, they weren't one-liners. They're every man little sarcastic stuff. Yeah, I think I preferred his. But they both equally have their place because a Schwarzenegger one-liner is also fantastic. So yeah, it's different.
No, but his one-liners are actually, if I'm assuming you've seen The Last Boy Scout, right? So in The Last Boy Scout,
Of course. Shane Black.
that's what a surprise. So in The Last Boy Scout, you have Bruce Willis's character, John Hollenbeck, who actually explains to Damon Wayans, that in order to be a private eye in this day and age, you have to have
Yeah,
quips.
the surf's up.
That's right.
I
There you go.
remember
Surf's up. That's the one.
But they make fun. See, they're making a meta joke about those lines where they don't really make throughout the movie during serious situations, they're saying more normal, cynical lines, but they're making fun of the Schwarzeneggery lines. Like if you hit somebody with a surfboard, you got to say surf's up or something,
That's right.
which I thought was pretty funny.
That's right. But I mean, what we have here with John is, his quips are not things you wouldn't you making fun of Schwarzenegger and saying I'll be back or stick around or all of those things, those make sense. You're not going to walk somewhere and say it's laundry day.
It's laundry day. De self-deprecating is pretty much what he's doing. He's doing a little self-deprecation
Yes.
With his comedy, which I love. I appreciate that.
It's true. It's true. Carl just gives him a very strange look as he says this. And then he says to him, "Well, what can I do for you, Lieutenant?" First of all, I got to give Carl credit for knowing that John is a lieutenant, just by the
Right.
fact that he just flashed him a badge.
That or it's a clue. There's three clues that happen in this scene, I think. But go ahead. Yeah,
No, but
I think it might be
he
a
calls
clue.
him lieutenant, not lieutenant. That would be the difference. If he would have said lieutenant.
What does he say when John comes in? Does he say Lieutenant John McClane or does he say John
He
McClane
just says
NYPD? What is?
John McClane NYPD.
So then it's a cl I think it's a clue. I
It's
think
a
that's a
clue that
clue.
he knows that John's a lieutenant.
The fact that he knows he's a lieutenant makes it seem like he knows who he is, which means he would know who he is. Because he's working for Simon Gruber, and Simon Gruber already called him and told him, John McClane's coming in. I'm half of this mission is to get the gold, but I'm gonna kill Lieutenant John McClane. So I think that's one of the. It could be. I'm just positing it out there. The fact that he knows that he's a lieutenant seems like he knows a lot more about this guy. If a cop walked up to me, he says, "Hello, but I'm with the NYPD Blue." I wouldn't know if he's a lieutenant, a captain, a sergeant. I wouldn't know that. Unless I knew him, who he was, especially if I'm a, that guy's not a cop. He's supposed to be a security guard at a bank. So he's not like, you know what I'm saying? He's not, maybe cops know cops, but I maybe I'm shortchanging security guards, but I wouldn't know who a lieutenant was by, he's not wearing a uniform, clearly.
No, but his
So
badge, but
he seems like he's,
maybe the color, I think the color of the badge is different if you're a lieutenant.
if you did that to me, and this is supposed to be a normal, he's just a security guard. He's not a cop, supposedly. We know who he is. But I'm saying the role he's playing is security guard of a bank, Would a security guard at a bank know the colors of a badge to know the difference between a lieutenant and a sergeant?
Well, I don't know. But once again, he's not a regular security guard. These are federal marshals.
Sure. I'll make you a federal marshal. Would a federal marshal know the difference between a lieutenant and a sergeant by the color of their badge? I don't
Maybe
know.
They should.
Maybe they should. I wouldn't think so. That, again, it could go either way. I like to think of it like a little clue, because like, there's another one coming up here that I think might be a clue.
There's a few clues
that
here.
That he's not who he is. So, yeah, it could be. There's the fact that he knows he's a lieutenant, kind of like, how do you know I'm a lieutenant? I could be anything. I could be Captain John McClane. You have no freaking idea.
That's right. You know, and John, like, looks down at his shoes and looks down at his whole, his own wardrobe. As he's talking to Carl,
right.
who quite confidently has his thumbs in his belt, which is
very. And Carl, by the way, super tall.
Well, we talked about tall. That yesterday. That's all they mentioned about him in IMDb, that he's 6'2". He's
6'2".
But just wait till
he's
later.
My height. But they shoot him in a way, because I'm tall. I'm 6'2" as well. But the way they shoot him. It seems like he's 7'2".
Well, just wait till later this minute.
Right. Later this minute, we're going to get some other basketball players coming in and showing up.
That's right. So Carl then says, what can I do for you, Lieutenant? And John goes, has it been quiet like this all morning here? Well, at least they got that alarm to stop ringing,
Right.
And he goes, well, and then John goes, except for the big explosion of a couple hours ago. I mean, have you seen anything strange happen in the last hour or so? And he goes, no. And we've had cops in here pretty steady since the subway thing. And John goes, yeah. So the way this conversation is going, it's a very strange conversation. You know, John's asking, has it been quiet? It's a little strange question for him.
He's poking around. He's just sticking his nose in just to see what if something gonna jump up at him. This to me is the Bill Clay scene, just played out a little differently. Like, when did John know that Bill Clay was Hans? So like, when does John know that this guy is not who he says he is?
Well, I don't think he knows it yet. I think he only finds it out with the mirror.
He doesn't know it yet. He knows something's up, but he's still like poking around, figuring it out. I think the next clue is where he knows it. He doesn't know. He knows it for certain, distinctly in a later shot.
Right.
But I think the next clue that I'm going to bring up when we get there is where I think personally where he figures something's off.
Right. Okay.
But yeah.
And then Carl says to him, well, we're just going to make a round on the vault floor if you want to tag along. And John goes, sure. Yeah, I think I will. So I just find it really strange that he says make a round. You wouldn't. That's not proper English. Just to make a round.
Another clue.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't one of the clues that I've always thought of when watching this movie.
No.
You know, when he says make around.
Make around, right.
You know, and then he says, well, if you want, you can tag along. You know, tag along is an interesting colloquialism to be using here. Do you know what tag along means, basically?
It sounds like it's a child's game that they've turned into some kind of thing, but I could be wrong. I'm not 100% sure.
So it's both a noun and a verb. The verb is the one that we always think of, to follow another's lead, especially in going from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but the noun is a strange one. It's one that persistently and often annoyingly follows the lead of another. Meaning that, he's a tag-along. You know, this is a guy.
Oh, he's a tag-along. Oh, right. I got you. Exactly. That makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And if it fits in here. Yeah, because that's what they want. Mm-hmm. I got to give him credit. It is a pretty good idea for him to do it this way. You know, like we know that Simon told him that he needs to kill John, but he doesn't tell him, okay, take him down to the vault and do it. I mean, he might have said it, but we don't know. It seems to me that it's pretty abrupt. He basically just said, okay, McClane's on his way to you. get rid of him. You know, that's what it is. And Carl thinks of this ingenious plan to you know, take him to let him make a round with him tagging along. You know. And then John just starts as the two of them are walking, responses Carl starts to make chit chat, and he goes, "What do you think of this heat this late in the year?" And then John goes, "Indian summer, huh?" So I
please tell me you have something about Indian summer.
Oh, of course, I do. So first of all, I want to go back and say that I gave a little bit of a hint at the beginning of this week that this week gives us even more of concrete evidence as to when this is taking place. Okay. And the term Indian summer is so telling with this whole thing. So have you ever heard the term Indian summer before, DJ?
I've heard the term. I don't know anything about what it means.
Okay. The idea of an Indian, first of all, there's a movie called Indian Summer from like 1993, which was terrible. Yeah. It's about a whole bunch of, former campers. When they're adults, they go back and spend the weekend at the camp. You know, okay. Meeting up with
Does
old
Jason
friends.
Voorhees show up? Please tell me Jason
no,
Voorhees
shows up. No, unfortunately not. Unfortunately not.
That would have been a better movie.
It does have
a better movie.
It does have a pretty good cast, but the movie itself is just terrible.
Kevin Bacon? Is Kevin Bacon a part of the cast?
Oh, Kevin Bacon was in Friday the 13th. So
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I know. But no, you have Alan Arkin, Matt Craven, okay. Diane Lane, Bill Paxton, Elizabeth Perkins, Kevin Pollak. Sam Raimi, Vincent Spano, Julie Warner, Kimberly Williams-Paisley. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anyone else here who
Sam Raimi is a weird shout.
Yeah.
That's a weird shout out. Right. He was the director, Sam Raimi.
Right. This movie was directed by Mike Binder, who has done some really interesting stuff over the years. Because, Mike Binder was in Minority Report and The Upside of Anger, but he's mostly known as a writer for some of the stuff that he did. He wrote this movie, Indian Summer. he not only directed it, but was in it. He did he wrote The Upside of Anger. He wrote Rain Over Me, the Adam Sandler.
Don Cheadle, I believe.
That's right. He wrote Mom. From the TV series from 2014, he thought of the what's going on? He wrote a few episodes of Ray Donovan.
Oh, so, good old Ray Donovan.
Yeah, and he directed 20 movies over his career. Yeah, he directed Blank Man. There you go.
Oh, gee. Well, there you go. You're burying the lead there. Very funny line in that, a very funny scene in that movie is when Jason Alexander plays a guy, paralyzed guy in a wheelchair, and they throw like coffee on him, and he's like, "Dude, I'm paralyzed. What are you doing?" I'm not a huge fan of Blank Man, but Jason Alexander is fantastic in that movie. Maybe because I just love Jason Alexander. George Costanza for you, Seinfeld fan.
Yeah, of course. That's not even a question. So an Indian summer is a period of unseasonably warm, dry weather that sometimes occurs in the autumn in temperate regions of the Northern Hemisphere. Several sources describe a true Indian summer as not occurring until after the first frost, or more specifically, the first killing frost, meaning that, this is supposed to be September, October, stuff like that. So, again, that makes a lot more sense that...
Oh, so school must have just started.
That's
then.
Right. We're here in September when this is all happening.
You said back to school a couple of episodes ago. You said back to school.
That's right.
So
and we debunked it at the time because both Jay and I believed that this movie takes place, in the late spring, early summer. And, over the last 68 episodes, I've come to realize that was a fallacy because I believe that this takes place in September or October 1994. It's not even 1995.
I mean, I'm born in September. School lets in around it's probably like a late August. I'd say like
it can't be late August because the kids are in school.
Well, school starts earlier now, so maybe
now. But we're talking 29 years ago, so I don't know.
When did school start in the '90s? I'm trying to remember when I went to school because I was still in high school. So, God, did it start in September? I can't remember.
Used to start in September, and there was like one or two years where we started like on the 20th of August, and we were all upset, you know, that we had to start earlier.
I remember starting in August one time, like late August, like 28, 29, so that it might be like the last week, because Labor Day is the 1st of September. So, yeah, I think it's around that area. I would always thought this movie was in July for some stupid reason.
Yeah, again,
the song Hot Time Somewhere in the City. It's I just think some, but you know, it makes the back to school shout. I didn't even realize that. So there you go.
Yeah. So now that Jay's listening to this, he'll know that he was, you know, that that there is something to that sign that we saw, you know, all the way back, right. You know, in episode one or two. At this point, you know, first of all, it's interesting because it makes you wonder, does Carl know what an Indian summer is when John mentions Indian summer? Because Carl's response is, yeah, it feels like it's going to rain like dogs and cats later.
That's my clue. That's when I think he nobody says dogs and cats. It's cats and dogs. There's a freaking movie called Cats and Dogs.
That's right.
It's raining cats and
well,
dogs.
Well, it hadn't come out yet.
He says raining. Sure. But I'm just saying, they called it that because the is cats and dogs. So when he says it's raining dogs and cats, I'm like, he's saying it backwards. That seems like it's a loss in translation thing. That's when I think John's like, okay, he might not know what's going on, but to me, in my mind, he knows that this guy is off.
That's right.
And then later, when he sees the concrete evidence, I think this is at the time, he might be like, okay, something might be wrong here. Maybe this guy's under duress or something. But when he says that, no, this guy's phony somehow. In my mind, I'm making my own lore in my mind. But when he says dogs and cats, like, nobody ever says it's raining dogs and cats. At least I've never heard it. I've always heard it's raining cats and dogs out there. And so, like, again, they named the movie Cats and Dogs because they named it for that reason. That's why they call it that. So yeah.
Well, was there heavy rain in that movie?
No, it's just, you know, the colloquialism, the idiom is cats and dogs.
Exactly. Completely. Okay, so where do you think the term raining cats and dogs comes from, and what does it really mean?
It's heavy rain. Maybe there was a tornado, right? It flew over a nice, quiet town with cats and dogs in the backyard, and it sucked those cats and dogs up, and it just rained down on the city afterwards, like in Magnolia with the frogs, but instead it was cats and dogs. Is that where it came from? I just made that up.
Okay,
but I'm gonna.
So first of all, according to Wikipedia, and this is very interesting, the idiom is either raining cats and dogs or raining dogs and cats.
I've never heard dogs and cats in my life.
I've never heard anyone use the phrase. I've never heard anyone use the phrase in real life either. Okay, it's used to describe particularly heavy rain, and it has an unknown etymology, but it's not necessarily related to the raining animals phenomenon.
Because I thought, I was like, maybe a tornado picked them. I guess that happened in Magnolia. The frogs got caught up in a tornado, and then they rained from the sky. I think maybe it's so heavy, it feels like it's raining dogs and cats. Maybe it's heavy. Yeah. Again, I've lived a long time. I'm an old man. I've never heard anybody say dogs and cats in my life.
Okay. I've heard it from this movie many times. Yeah. You're saying beyond.
And every time he says, I'm like,
you're saying besides Carl saying it.
Saying when Carl said it in the movie, I'm like, huh?
That's right.
What? It's dogs. It's cats and dogs, man.
That's right. So there's a whole bunch of different.
That's like, oh well, yo, you know what? I want to get some jelly and peanut butter sandwiches. Nobody says that. It's peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Correct.
It's like nobody says jelly and peanut butter sandwiches. When you hear it, your brain's like, that something's off. That's not right. You're saying it backwards. Why are you saying it backwards?
Correct. No, I definitely agree with you 100% on that. So there's a few possible places of where this phrase actually came from. So one of them is during the 17th century in Europe, the drainage systems on buildings was very poor. And quite often, you know, when the water would come out, so there would be animals that would come through it also. Okay. And they have an example in a 1710 poem by Jonathan Swift. Okay, so anyone who knows that he was a satirist, Okay, called Description of a City Shower. I'll give a warning to people that this is very graphic about animals. It says, drowned puppies, stinking sprats, all drenched in mud. Dead cats and turnip tops come tumbling down the flood. Okay. It makes sense that that's
I don't know
Jonathan's
what to
book.
say.
Another thing is, another possible places is that it could be, there's a Greek word called katadupau, which refers to the waterfalls of the Nile. And they're saying that it possibly was just mistranslated into, instead of saying waterfall, that it's, cats and dogs because of the way that the word sounds. There is a Greek expression called katadoxa, which means contrary to experience or belief. So, meaning if it's raining cats and dogs, it is raining unusually hard. But again, nobody knows if exactly where that comes from. Another claim is that in 16th century Europe, animals were able to crawl into the thatch of peasant homes to seek shelter from the elements, and during heavy rains, they would fall out. So therefore, that's why they said it would be raining cats and dogs. But
I can dig it.
exactly. So Carl, has a little bit of a gaffe here with that. By
Possibly. Apparently, it's people say dogs and cats as well, according to the definition, but I humbly disagree. I've never heard it. I've never heard anybody say it. It's odd. If somebody said it, I'd be like, "Are you an alien? Are you a robot? What are you? You're a cyborg. I don't trust you."
that's right. And then
Cylon.
seriously, they walk towards the gate of the elevator, and we see Otto standing there, who we met earlier, and he's the guy who actually killed Walsh all those weeks
Right.
ago. And basically, Carl introduces him and goes, "Hey, here's one of your guys." And he goes, "Detective Otto, isn't it?" And he like steps forward and shakes John's hand. John introduces himself and goes, "John McClane." So what's very funny is they mentioned the fact that Otto doesn't know English a few weeks ago. So
Right.
he at least, and this is an American actor. He's not even,
Is he?
yes.
If you would have bet me money if he was from like the Eastern Bloc, I'd have believed you, man. I'd have put all my money on it. He was like Russian or German or something
Nope,
like that.
nope. Is I talked about it a few weeks ago. He actually has a very interesting story to his name. I mean, his name is Richard Council. He was named after he had a brother who died as an infant. So his parents named him after his brother and after a soldier who apparently they knew that died not long after World War II.
Wow.
So yeah. But I was very shocked that this is an American actor. And then Carl, the elevator doors open, and Carl walks in and goes, "Hey, Mike, how you doing?" Talk about trying to be as American as possible. Because I mean, first of all, the character that plays quote unquote Mike is his name is Gunther in the movie. Which isn't surprising. He's played by an actor named Timothy Adams. He has the right look here. That's
Yeah, I'd say so.
the idea here. To give these guys as much of the look as possible. We also talked a little bit about him earlier this season. I mean, he has 32 IMDb credits, and he was married to Daisy Fuentes.
What?
Do you remember who Daisy Fuentes was?
I know who Daisy Fuentes is. I had MTV. Daisy Fuentes was married to
Yes.
this guy?
For 4 years, even at the time of this movie. Yes.
What? Oh, now, kids, Daisy Fuentes, at the time of the height of Daisy Fuentes, was one of the most beautiful women. No, that's not proper. She was one of the it girls for a nice chunk of time there, I would say. Daisy Fuentes, Carmen Electra. She was like in that zeitgeist of very beautiful women. I remember for MTV. I think she was on MTV a lot, I believe. I think
she was
on MJ. I can't remember, but I just remember. Yeah, so yeah, Daisy Fuentes. Well, Downtown Julie Brown, Daisy. Ananda Lewis came in later. She was on BET. But yeah, Fuentes was married to this guy. Oh my God, what a crazy.
Woo. Yes.
Daisy, I mean, she wasn't like my number one, but I remember seeing like, oh, Daisy Fuentes, she's hot. That was like, but yeah, wow. I'd have never guessed that in a million years.
years. That's why I'm here. I'm glad that I have
all the names I thought I would ever hear you say. Daisy Fuentes would be last on my list.
There you go. And you know, it's just funny that he calls him Mike. You know, just let's make this seem as American as possible.
Yeah, go. What would have been a more American name than that's Mike? Right. I guess John. I guess.
So Gunther and Otto stand on John's left-hand side, and Carl is on the right-hand side. And as the four of them are in the elevator, we see another guy show up who, and he's humongous.
He's got to be – I'm 6'2", so he's got to be – he's got to be 6'6", 6'7". Something like more than that. Okay, yeah.
I'll tell you. Okay, it's an actor named Greg A. Skorik. Okay, this is his only IMDb credit. Okay, in this movie as Kurt. He is 6'10".
Okay. Because he has to duck down into the elevator. So he's a gigantic human being. Because the guy we see before, that's the raiding dogs and cats guy, he's my height. And they shoot him in a way where he looks taller than he is. So when that guy gets in, and then a guy makes that guy look like normal, you're like, what?
Exactly.
this is some kind of Terminator that's walking in.
Well, he's taller than Schwarzenegger.
He's taller than Schwarzenegger, but again, they always shoot Arnold in those movies like he's 18 feet tall. So it's
so in other words, we need to see Kurt next to Schwarzenegger at some point.
Schwarzenegger is shorter than me, I think. Schwarzenegger is like 6 foot, 6'1", maybe. He's not. He's gigantic, but he's at the time, but. He was more wide than he was tall. He's not I think he was 6'1". Tells me, I've seen shots of him next to like basketball players, and he looks like when they make him look like a person, like a man, of course, which looks like a regular guy.
He's 6'2".
You know, he's like a little bit, he's like my height. So yeah, Schwarzenegger compared to like, you know, look at him next to other people, gigantic, but you watch the Terminator movies because he's always around like small actors. He looks gigantic, but you know, 6'2", because I'm 6'2", is a normal tall guy size. When you're pushing past 6'2", that's when you become like an anomaly. 6'2" is like the tallest you can be being a normal person. When you're past 6'2", you're not normal.
Well, anymore. Come on, this guy looks like Lurch. You know.
He looks like freaking Lurch.
He's a Nazi Lurch.
I think he... if he goose steps, he's kicking the guy in front of him, okay? He's a gigantic man.
Completely. Gigantic man. And so he like ducks in and you know, enters the elevator with him. Carl then closes the gate, and the door closes. And John just looks around. He's surrounded by four humongous guys. And he just like looks up, and you know, the way that his eyes move up, it could be one of two things. Either he's praying right now, or he's looking to say, okay, what floor do I need to get off on? It's one of those two.
Well, remember, whatever their floor, he's going on their floor. He's tagging along. He's the tag along. So I think at this point, this is like, what? This is confusing. Like he seems almost confused. Like,
yeah, seriously. Because also as Carl is closing the door to the elevator, he goes, I keep telling myself I'm going to take the stairs just for the exercise. And on a hot day like this, but it seems like I always end up riding the lift.
Riding the lift. lift, another clue.
Correct.
You say, you would say elevator.
If that's you're, right. If you're, that's right. It's a European term to call it a lift.
Yeah, that's clearly a European term.
Yes. And, you know, so far, what have we counted? Three or four, you know, examples of.
I'd say about four clues. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And John is just ready to move along. You know, he knows that something's up, but he isn't sure yet what it is. That's all we have for this minute. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I like this scene a lot. The ending of the scene I love a lot. We're going to talk about that later. But yeah, that this movie, this whole tension, this is how you build tension. Because when you put the audience ahead of the main character, you get the tension thing. Because you're like, no, John, don't go in the elevator. So that's how you do it. This is how you do it right. This is the Scorsese cinema thing. This is cinema. This is the good stuff.
Correct. All right. So the script also, there isn't much here, but they have some interesting stuff here. Mm. So it says Nigel. Remember we talked about yesterday. It's not Carl. It's Nigel in the script. Nigel exchanges a tense glance with the other guards, then smiles at McLean and says in an American accent, "What can I do for you, Lieutenant? Anything strange happen, say, in the last hour? No. You sure?" The other two guards approach. Nigel turns to them and says, "You guys see anything funny in the last hour?" And says the other guards, "Freddy and Bert." Okay. Those are their names.
I like Bert. Whoever Bert is, I'm a fan of Bert. That's an American name, too.
That's right. It'd be funny if they called him Bert and Ernie. You know?
Bert and Ernie. God, that would be hilarious. Ernie, Bert, you guys see anything? No, I ain't seen him, Bert.
And he says, "Nope, not a thing." And then McLean says, "Mind if I take a look at the vault? It'll only take me 2 minutes. Be my guest."
See, I don't like that. I prefer the other. Why would McLean want to see the vault? I know why, because he wants to see if they may have robbed it. But like, I don't think he would ask to do that.
Okay. Then.
Yeah, I prefer the movie.
Nigel then says, "Be my guest." He rises, coming up from behind the desk. "This way." McLean follows the guards across the lobby. They move past the metal detector and down the side corridor. McLean continues towards the stairwell in front of him. Nigel then says, "Lieutenant." McLean stops. He turns. The desk guard is pointing at the elevators. He smiles and says, "Take the lift." So, again, I
don't like that. That's way more conspicuous. Way more conspicuous. And I think if John McLean's a cop, again, I don't know how jurisdiction works. If he goes, "Let me see the vault," I don't think he'd be allowed to see the vault if they wouldn't volunteer him to go. Again, I could be wrong. It seems like, because this is a federal building. You're a New York City cop. It's not even the feds would have jurisdiction over this, not you. So for you to say, "Let me see the vault," they can be like, "No."
That's right.
You're not allowed to see the vault. Nope. So yeah, I prefer the other thing, which could be also a clue when they say you can come tag along. I don't think a federal guard would let any beat cop to them tag along and see all the security layout of a federal building without clearance. So yeah, that could be another clue. Yeah. I prefer the
movie. Me too, for sure. Especially knowing what's coming up tomorrow. All right, so every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Revenge Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to either revenge or sibling rivalry or something like that. So, DJ, you happen to have a story for us?
Okay, I haven't really talked about it. It's funny because you asked me this, and I called my sister literally 3 hours ago. My sister Taylor, and I was like, "Taylor, have you ever fought over anything?" And because we have a gap in between years, she's like, "No, because you're so old and I'm gap is so far, we've never really had a fight." And I was like, "Screw you, Taylor. Why are you calling me an old man?" Anyway,
and that's your story.
She was like, "Do you remember?" That's my story. No, she was like, "Have you ever remembered a time where you were really mad at me?" I go, and you brought it up earlier today. Earlier this episode, coincidentally. My sister used to work for a talent agency in California, and she was, when you work there, you get tickets to go to things like, you know, award shows and stuff like that. And she got to go to the Golden Globes. I think it was 2019, 2018, one of those years. I can't remember. And she was there, and we got to see her on TV because she was like really close up. She's like, but you see the actors and the people that filled the seats behind the actor. My sister was one of them. And we saw her on TV, and we were like, yeah, that's great. And I went to sleep because it's 3 hours ahead of me. So it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. To her, it's like whatever. So she had called me, and I saw a missed call, one missed call. And I called her back the next morning. I'm like, oh, what's up? You okay? Everything's fine? She's like, yeah, I was trying to call you. I was at the red carpet after the thing, and I met an actor, and he wanted to talk to you. I'm like, what? She says, Peter Dinklage, Tyrion Lannister. At the time, Game of Thrones was good, and I loved Game of Thrones. She had met Peter frickin' Dinklage and told him that I liked Game of Thrones at the time. And he said to her, call him. I'll talk to him. And she called me one time and didn't call me again. I'm like, you call me once? Keep calling me. Wake me up. She goes, no, you didn't answer the phone. I was like, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. Keep calling me. So, yes, to this day, I will never forget the time. I could have had a conversation with Tyrion Lannister, Peter Dinklage, Oscar-nominated Peter Dinklage, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him because she was just like, oh, yeah, he's nice. I was like, what do you mean? Why did I get... So that was all the things my sister has ever done to me that I always hold against her is the fact that I could have had a conversation. I could have asked him so many questions. I could have stopped season 8. I could have stopped it, folks. I could have figured out why.
I don't know if you would have been able to stop it, but...
Probably not. I got into his ear, maybe. I don't know. Yes. Apparently, he was a very nice guy. I never got to talk to him. My sister said he was very nice and very generous. And he was like, next time. And they got in a car and drove away. I was like, it's gritting my teeth. At the time, guys, you got to remember, Game of Thrones was in its pomp. It was good still. So I was a huge fan of Tyrion Lannister, other than Arya Stark, was one of my favorite characters. So, yes, I was very upset that I didn't get to talk to him. So, yeah, I hold it against her forever. She laughs in my face. But
she laughs in your face now because she knows that that's how much that would have meant to you.
Yes, she likes to hold it over me, and I like to hold it over her. Like, yeah, every time she asks me something, I'm like, yeah, remember that time you screwed me over and you only called me one time? Like, if I know, like, you, like if I had Weird Al Yankovic here and I call you once, I'm like, then I got to call back. I got to keep calling. I'm going to FaceTime you because I know how much this person, I'm not saying Peter Dinklage means a lot to me, but, like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do, you didn't answer. Oh, well. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't shrug it off.
Seriously. Oh, wow. That is a great and unfortunately sad story.
It's not great. There's nothing great about it. I'm still traumatized.
Oh. Well, what can we do? At least now the rest of the people listening to this know that story too, DJ. Maybe Peter Dinklage is listening to it and we'll call you up. Guys. And so I did.
Peter, it wasn't a slight, Peter. I was asleep. I was trying. If she would have called twice, I'd have probably woke up. My phone rings really loudly. I don't know why she only called me once. I apologize, Peter. I loved you in season 6 and 5 and 4 and 3 and 2 and 1 and 7.
Which side of the car were you sleeping in?
I was driving.
There you go. Makes sense. All right, DJ, would you like to once again tell people where they can find DJ Valentine?
Trying to be DJ VN, X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. The show I'm on, Simplistic Reviews, is you can just search Simplistic Reviews or just go to simplistic.reviews or search us on Twitter, X, whatever you call it, at Simple Tweeters. That's us.
All right. Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to my podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So DJ, maybe we just won't do tomorrow's episode. Nothing. It's going to be really boring. It's going to be like boring elevator music.
This is the best part of it. Like what are you talking? This is the best scene. No, you're not skipping this. All right. This is the best part of the scene. What are you talking about?
So in other words, you want to come back tomorrow. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
You're like, you got Peter Dinklage on the line. You won't call me. Call me. Damn it. Call me. Keep calling me.
All right.
Robo call me. Damn it.
Not a problem. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. Modify.
There you go. Hans Gruber showed up again.
comes marching home again. Hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.